to say, we know that we are making a difference. And so we have built an accountability system. In fact, we started in 1997 and contracted with Oregon State. I understand I can't say Oregon State University anymore, but Oregon State to develop and build a curriculum for us so we could train local counties. We are very focused on evidence-based practice and outcomes, and we train not only our staff, but we train all over the state in how do you contract with local providers to ensure that you are getting the outcomes that you have asked them to provide. We have programs and initiatives. We have three state programs, Healthy Start, Relief Nurseries, although Relief Nursery is not statewide, it is meant to roll out statewide, and court-appointed advocates. We have initiatives that we have worked on, positive youth development through a federal grant. We have homeless and runaway as a result of legislation passed last session. Cultural competency, that's been a foundational piece. Cultural competency is a screen through which we look at everything we do, and I'll talk more about that when we get to Partners for Children and Families.
Can you hold for just a minute, please? Members, what I'd like to do, we're going to have today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and then next week I will work this budget. So please, while Ms. Lansing is before us, and she has her operations person, and Dr. Fano is going, actually, is here with us. Please ask your questions, because next week I want to work this budget. So if you have any questions, these 2 days, 3 days would be the time to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carter. The fifth one is plan development and implementation. Again, we at the state level, the state office, is the facilitator of the multi-agency group that looks at how do we best coordinate some of these issues, like runaway and homeless, community school, early childhood system, etc. And then we have resource development. We actually have a person on staff who tries and develops resources for this system. We in our legislation also have a piece around being what I call more entrepreneurial about how we work with other entities. And so we have a particular focus in working with the foundation community, the philanthropic community, to ensure that local commissions are able to access those dollars, and we partner with them. I'll tell you more later, too, about that, because I think we have an excellent partnership, and we've got some very good results, especially as it relates to the court-appointed special advocate program. So, any questions there? All right. Then I am going to move over to the primary responsibilities of a local commission on children and families. And you'll see on page 7 where it talks about advising the Board of County Commissioners. Key area. That local commission looks at everything that's going on in the community, and they are able to advise a county commissioner or the county commissioners about what needs to occur, what can be helpful in their community. They build community and through mobilizing.
Somebody turn the phone off because we're getting on the record, please.
Oh, no, that's for me.
Well, everybody look in your purse, see if your phones are off. Thank you.
They develop. Again, they locally are the facilitator for the development of that local community plan, and you're going to hear how helpful that is. They monitor results, they manage their resources, and they have a tremendous amount of leverage, both dollars and effort, on behalf of community members. You're going to hear in the next presentation, when you hear from Marion and Tillamook counties, really what it is they do as it relates to that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon?
Will we hear in those presentations, thank you, Madam Chair, examples of how dollars are leveraged at the local level? Because the governor's budget doesn't include, if we were to focus on the governor's budget, it doesn't include all the resources that you're able to leverage at the local level. We want to make sure that we have a real good understanding of what that picture looks like and what that dollar figure is, as much as you can tell us what that looks like for the 36 counties.
Can I come up with that? Because you said something I think very, very interesting and very creative, in that you work with foundations. And so are you being, how effective are you being with foundations and raising dollars that way as well?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, on Wednesday we'll go into that further, but we will have some specific answers for you because we can actually tell you dollar amounts, and they will be talking about
that. It's picking up on the point that Dr. Henry made about how the system produces money, and it does. So, yeah.
Okay, we will. All right. Now I'm going to refer you to Section 1, page 8, that's the next page, where we're going to talk about our funding streams, our programs, and our initiatives. Okay, I am just going to very quickly go through. This is sort of a diverse group of funding streams that we work with. Many are general fund, some are federal funds, some you'll see as other funds. But local basic capacity, which is local policy and program support, and you're going to hear more about that when Marion and Tillamook County come up after me. Great Start. Great Start is that locally invested fund for children 0 to 8 years of age, again, where communities say, here's a gap, here's something we need to do more of, this is what the data shows us, this is what we're going to do. Children, Youth, and Families, a locally invested grant stream, 0 to 18. And again, you make choices locally about what fits your community. Both of those funding streams, the only real parameter around that is that the programs that are funded must be evidence-based. So they must have evidence-based components. Juvenile crime prevention, to again prevent juvenile crime. These are youth who are at higher risk of penetrating the juvenile justice system. Healthy Start, family support services, home visitation to firstborns. The initial vision that it was a universal home visitation program for all firstborn children and their families. Relief nurseries, again, child abuse prevention relief nurseries focuses on the family with therapeutic classrooms, wraparound services. Some of them they refer for employment training, people who need housing, alcohol and drug issues, mental health issues, just a real service locally to that community to keep those children from going in the child welfare system. Court-appointed special advocates. This is a program that has one of the greatest impacts and is one of the best investments we can make, because these are volunteers who, again, advocate on behalf of the child. Early childhood system. We have a lead in providing information and technical assistance to local communities in terms of their early childhood teams and what an early childhood system can look like. Positive youth development. We have a five-year, it's the second five-year grant we have, to see how we as agencies embed in both policy and practice positive youth development principles, and then how do we support people locally in doing the same thing. Child Care and Development Fund, CCDF we call it, and there are three agencies that really share the major portion of that fund. That is the Commission on Children and Families, Department of Human Services, and Employment Department Child Care Division. Our particular piece of that is supply and quality of child care in local communities. Safe and Stable Families, a federal grant that promotes the expansion of family support and reunification, family preservation services. Youth Investment, Title 20, these are federal dollars that support ages 13 to 18, 11 and 12 where applicable. Again, these are youth who are at risk. Some of them are homeless, runaway. They are at risk of neglect, but they are not yet in the juvenile justice system.
community schools, and a community school is defined, as you see here, as a public school that combines the best quality educational practices with a wide range of supports that all families need. Again, it's a way of wrapping around the social supports with the school. And most are school-based, but not all. Some are school-linked if they're in rural areas. And then homeless and runaway. Again, last year, and I just want to say that you asked us, you the legislature, you asked us to come back to you in 2 years, 2007, and present you with recommendations as to what kind of a system we need in the state of Oregon for homeless and runaway. We presented to the Substantive Committee, the House Committee on Human Services and Women's Wellness, 19 recommendations, and the governor included in his budget a portion, a very small amount, for homeless and runaway. But you asked us to come back with recommendations. 26 agencies, both state and local, have done that. So those are the funding streams. All right, now I'm going to go to the next page, page 9.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nikki, is there any risk of loss of funds because of ONC loss of funds? Are we looking at situations, some of the counties are not going to be able to make match money, or is most of the ONC money going for law and order issues and libraries and roads and schools? But there's been some question whether or not some ONC funds might affect programs like this.
Chair Carter, Senator Bates. Yes, there certainly is. Those counties are having a very difficult time, especially the counties of Jackson, Josephine, Douglas, as Representative Morgan knows, Coos, Curry. I think altogether at least 30 counties are affected by the loss of ONC revenues, and some much more than others, especially some of those southern counties. And we have gathered a group of counties together to begin that conversation. The State Commission is also going to address that issue with the counties in terms of what is it that we actually can do. But when those funds are gone, it even is more important, I must say to you, to be able to mobilize the community around what kinds of supports are available for kids and families, because it's a huge loss, as you know, in Jackson County.
No problem, Madam Chair. In a lot of counties, there's not much loss in human services, big loss in other parts of the programs, and it seems to vary from county to county. We're having a hard time figuring that out. Anything you do to give us that kind of information would be helpful. Well, some of your programs are match money from local counties, if I remember correctly. And if some counties can't leverage that money from you because of ONC loss, it's important for us to know that.
Chair Carter, Senator Bates, that's absolutely correct. Two programs in particular have a required match.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll do what we can.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morser.
Yeah. I'll Nikki, along that line, are counties in the counties are in the process of making doing their budget right now, right? And so are there identifiable cuts? Mm-hmm. I guess I'm trying to be more specific in terms of what you know about what counties are doing.
Chair Carter, Senator Morissette, when we convene the counties, one of the biggest issues, and as Senator Bates says, most of them are not using the bulk of that money for human services, but they're using them in other areas, which is going to create then the necessity to look at their budgets in a more holistic way and see how can we backfill some of these things. One of the biggest, I think, impacts for this system is around staff. Because if you start to lay off staff and start to bump staff, are you going to, the staff locally is hired by the local Board of County Commissioners, are you going to have the trained staff you need to do this kind of work? That's another of the issues. Or will the counties want to take dollars for a specific, that's in a specific grant stream, and use them specifically for something else, maybe that you would not ordinarily do? It's a very difficult issue, as you know.
Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask my question now, since we have now arrived at page 9.
Okay.
We're just getting there. In the mission of this organization or agency, it says, facilitates and supports local coordinated comprehensive planning for all children and families. And you've been doing a very good job of letting us know how you do that, how this really does help the coordination among all the local agencies across all the counties. And what we're doing is we're helping leverage dollars, leverage resources, leverage time. So that's all very understandable as you explain it. Then when we get to page 9 and we see what to me looks like a pretty full mix of players, what I'm saying is that even though we have a very clearly defined organization chart, and I thank you for that, it looks like what we have really is, rather than a single system, we have something that's more like a multifaceted, multidimensional, at least 3D, if not 4D, work of art, where everything is just playing together at the same time. But I guess my question to you is, on page 9, the top box, it refers to a state system. The way I interpret the situation, however, is there's not really one person or one agency in charge. There's really no there. Is that correct?
Chair Carter, Representative Nathanson, you might describe it in that particular way. Let me just give you, can I give her a brief bit of history? And I don't know, Sheila, you may also want to chime in here. In 1999, a bill passed, which is commonly referred to as Senate Bill 555.
I got a copy.
Oh, good for you. And so what that bill did was direct state agencies, especially 5, Oregon Youth Authority, Oregon Department of Human Services, the Oregon Commission on Children and Families, the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee, Education, and Oregon Department of Education. And then it said those 5 agencies are 5 core agencies that need to get together, look at those 36 local plans, see what rises to the top in those local plans, and see how you can make a greater impact on that particular issue by working together. They also said that Housing and Community Services, Community Colleges, Workforce Development, Employment Department, they actually said Economic Development too, and by the way, the Progress Board is there because the Progress Board needs to evaluate progress on how you're doing, that they are to take the findings of those local plans that come in every 2 years and use that information in their budget development, and then to look at issues where you can make some difference. Again, we're going to talk more about that. That particular piece has been going on now for about 8 years. The first piece of that was all these agencies got together, the main 5. But we all do meet together around these issues. They got together, they created guidelines, they created standards, quality assurances, they looked at what we needed. I will tell you, when the first plans were to be approved, 26 out of the 36 plans could not be approved because they were asked, each community, to address areas of cultural competency. And they were not able to do that in the way in which that it needed to be done. So we had to help those communities do that. But in fact, at the same time, you said then the next biennium is, but we're going to give you the first issue that we want you to work on. And that you look at that early childhood system and see how we need to come up with a comprehensive system. And then we said, oh, by the way, too, there's an issue around community schools. If we wrap social supports around schools, that's where kids and their families are, we can make a greater impact on them. And then last session you said, and the homeless and runaway population needs to have a certain focus. So we're going to ask you to work on that and come back with recommendations. What I'm trying to say to you is that you've got these 5 agencies plus others, and I look at them as sort of silos. Picture them in a bar graph. And then there's this great big circle up above where we all connect. So we each have our own mission and purpose. But for this particular initiative, we're coming together to see if we can coordinate with one another, reduce some fragmentation duplication, and make a greater impact around that particular issue. And what's happened to us in the last year, this is the first time we've said, the legislature gave us three initiatives, but we know from the local plans there are two more initiatives that are really important. And so we've also adopted them. However, we are sorely challenged by our resources in order to support doing that kind of work. So I don't know. Did that answer your question, Representative Nathanson?
A brief follow-up. I guess what I really want to know is that among all these different agencies, is everybody really playing together nice? They come together as equals. Is the collaboration happening well enough so that we really are doing a better job of coordinating and orchestrating this to work as a whole?
Chair Carter, Representative Nathanson. Number one, this work is not for the faint of heart. Number two, things happen over a period of time. But number three, what I will say to you is that in terms of intent, these people and our implementation group at the state level, it consists of both state and local people. They have been absolutely steadfast in wanting to do a better job. Now, what we have struggled with is, where does the policy piece of this come from? And in the belief that the State Commission has the director of the Employment Department on it by design, the Superintendent of Public Instruction on it by design, and the director of the Department of Human Services on it, that we would look to the State Commission to look at the policy issues and then maybe send them to the implementation team. We started out with the implementation team doing the work without, I believe, probably the in-depth policy work that needed to be done first. We are in the process of transitioning that.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So the West Virginia Representative Doug Gerard.
Just as a point of historical perspective, the aforesaid legislation you mentioned was never commonly referred to as Senate Bill 555. It was legally and technically referred to as Senate Bill 555, but it was commonly referred to as the triple nickel. But more germanely to the point, and perhaps a little bit to Representative Nathanson's question, when we did this in 99, it was incredibly complex and very controversial. You would think this, encouragement and be legislated requirement for these disparate agencies with a common purpose, much overlap to collaborate, would be kind of common sense, but it was far from that. It was a very elegant construct of these agencies coming together, and I really want to compliment the work of Director Lansing and many in the room. John Yunker was back there. I mean, there are a lot of people that put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into crafting this. So compliments, thank you, and don't ever call the triple nickel Senate Bill 555.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to Representative Nathanson's question and Director Lansing's response, she recalls in 1999 when I was a county commissioner that I had to terminate the director of My Children and Families for the very reasons that have been discussed here today and what wasn't happening. But it emphasizes that focus on the director, the county, and the state working together. And we haven't had any further instances that I know of. So we must have done good work back then.
Chair Carter, Representative Girard, I think you did a very good job in approaching that. And Senator Westland, I want you to know I stand corrected.
I'm telling Gene Durfler.
So I am going to move on to page 10, and I'm not going to go over this in detail, but page 10 is a building blocks of the mission of what we now call Partners for Children and Families, which was the triple nickel, the goals of state agencies, communities, and then some of the strategic initiatives which I have mentioned. And Matt, if you want to just pass this out, this is just a sheet that will give you an idea of the goals of these five initiatives, what the outcome measures are that we have developed for those five initiatives, what the outputs are, and thus far some of the accomplishments. It's not meant to be exhaustive, but it's meant to be readable and understandable. Chair Carter and members of the committee, my hope is that we can go into this further. I wanted to pass this out to you so that if you have questions on day three, we can talk more about it. Meeting Wednesday, the 16th.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gorley.
Thank you. Just to give you a heads up, when we do that, it would be helpful to talk about this chart along with the actual investments that have been made in each of the categories, so that we're able to understand how far we're penetrating, and then use that word, in reaching a certain population, or in meeting certain goals, whether it's goals that are set forth by the Oregon Progress Board or goals that are set forth by local commissions. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
Chair Carter, Senator Gorley.
Another way of saying, let's track how
the relationship.
Right. Right.
Okay. We will do that.
Thank you. Ms. Hanson.
I will now direct your attention to Section 3, the Budget Summary, page 4. A few moments ago, I very quickly went through the different funding streams. And again, I don't want to spend too much more time. I will talk a little bit about the state staff, but I did talk about what they did. You're going to hear more from, again, these two local commissions, and I'm anxious for them to be able to come and talk to you. So I want to sort of move on through this. Again, local basic capacity. And if you have any questions about this, just stop me, because I'm going to go really quite quickly through this. In the state office, again, you saw that diagram of the six areas where we focus on all those tasks and activities to make sure that we ensure the effectiveness of the dollars that we spend. And again, I'll quote Senator Schrader here. Last session, he did say we had presented him with what we called a roadmap of performance measures, and we were able to show how local commissions really targeted three basic areas and how the results of the funding of those local programs rolled up on a statewide basis. And he did say he thought that was an excellent example of how you can articulate your outcomes and show the kinds of effects that you are getting in local communities. Healthy Start, again, I'm just going to move through. If you have something, I want to stop at court-appointed special advocates. This is an area where I said to you I'd talk a little bit more about our public-private partnership. What we know now is the CASA program can only serve 30% of those children who are eligible. We have both federal and state legislation says that every child in out-of-home placement should have a CASA, is entitled to a CASA. But what we have done in terms of leveraging additional resources is that we have worked with first the Oregon Community Foundation. Now there are five other foundations that have joined with them. They are going to contribute over a three-year period $2.2 million to the CASA program. And, of course, they also expect to be a partner with you, the legislature, in making sure that they have funding for that.
Question, please. Well, Ms. Lansing, on the central staffing support, in terms of the mission, and it says ensuring program fidelity of statewide programs, tell me, how does that happen?
Chair Carter, that happens through evaluation. One of the things that I think you did absolutely correctly is when Healthy Start first came into being as a program, you made sure that there was an evaluation every year of the effects and the impacts of Healthy Start. What are the results? And so that's what we mean, that we also want to make sure that the programs we fund are evidence-based in some way. What we have been doing in the last 2 years is going through a credentialing process for the Healthy Start program by Healthy Families America. And Healthy Families America is considered a promising practice. We get excellent results. We just haven't had the money to do the longitudinal studies that we have hoped, although we have our evaluator in the room today, and if you have any specific questions about that, we are hoping we're going to be able to get to that particular area. So is that helpful,
Senator Carter? When you talk about cultural competency initiative, explain that one a little bit for me.
Chair Carter, cultural competency, and this relates specifically not only as a value of our agency, but to the work we do with Partners for Children and Families. We have a cultural competency coordinator located in our office. We supervise the work, and what they do is support the agencies that are part of Senate Bill 5, the Triple Nickel, and Partners, which is really commonly referred to as Partners for Children and Families, to support that work in helping communities be able to have the tools they need in order to provide culturally competent services.
Madam Chair, Senator Williams. Thank you. Just a quick question, and when you come back with your detailed data, are you going to separate the outputs by county for all 36 counties, and how much is being leveraged by each one of those counties, commissions?
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, I'm just looking to our fiscal person here, Marcia Court, to see if that's possible.
I raise that because the work in the commission and with the counties is, I think, the only entity within, when we did the Children's Plan, which was in 2001, that actually specifies the leveraging aspect of what you do. And I think it's well to know that should be one of the outputs, at least those of us who sit here on budget, as to with X amount of dollars, how much are you really leveraging in your respective communities. Because I know in my community here in Marion County, there's a huge partnership between the private community and the public community in order to address some of the issues and problems. So,
Marcia? Yes. For the record, my name is Marcia Clark. I'm the Operations Director for the Commission on Children and Families. Chair Carter, Senator Winters. Yes, we should be able to bring back that on Wednesday when we do our key performance measures.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm just going to move on here. I keep looking at the clock and want to make sure the local people. We talked about relief nurseries, Great Start, Children, Youth, and Families, Child Care Development Block Grant, Youth Investment, safe and stable families. That's gone from what we called family preservation and support to the Adoption and Safe Family Act, and now it's called Safe and Stable Families Act, and we have a piece of that, and DHS has another piece, and juvenile crime prevention. And so with that, I am going to turn it over to Marcia and let her go through the technical budget summary for you, unless you have any questions.
Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Clark.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Carter. I'd like to direct your attention to page 8 and 10 of the same section that you're in, 8, 9, 10, and 11, basically. What you have on page 8 is the 2005-07 legislatively adopted budget, and on page 10 is the 2007-09 governor's recommended budget in total. So it's a summary then. The general fund increase from 0507 to 0709 is recommended in the governor's budget to be about $18.5 million. The policy packages offered by the governor are $16.9 million, and the rest being the essential package roll-up of the budget. Would like to just point out a few key things about this budget and then give an opportunity for the locals to get up here. I know they're anxious and you're anxious to hear from them. Our budget is 70% general fund and 30% federal and other funds. I would like to point out, too, that our, most of the other funds within the department's budget are federal funds that are actually passed through from other agencies. So youth investment passes through, Title 20 passes through the Department of Human Services to us and shows up in our budget as other funds. So you'll see us refer to other funds, federal funds, in the same as the same thing. The essential packages, again, are $1.6 million. Governor's budget is $16.9. Policy option packages, which you'll hear about in depth on Wednesday. Want to also point out real quickly that as we're looking at the increases or the additional funds that the governor has recommended for the budget, is 70% of those funds are restoring previous cuts to the budget. And about 20% of it is for expanding existing programs, and 10% is to add into the new initiative. So you'll see runaway and homeless and community schools included in that 10%. And the increases for relief nurseries and CASA are in the 20.
Where are you planning? Where are the two relief nurseries?
Those sites have not been identified. There will be a process to determine who those communities will be.
Chair Carter and Senator Winters, and just to say that we have areas all over the state that are interested in new relief nurseries.
Maybe I should rephrase the question. How many counties or cities would like to have a new relief nursery?
I think probably if you would explain your process a little better, maybe that would get to the question, because I hear Ms. Clark saying that we haven't decided, but we have a process in place statewide to determine where those nurseries will be. And so I'm respecting that process, but I don't think the Senator might have heard that piece,
okay,
because you said you had a lot of cities and counties who want it.
Yeah. Chair Carter, Senator Winters, the process will be an application process for all of the areas that are interested. And to date, we know of five or six communities that have expressed interest. We know there are more that may not be ready this go-around. So they will respond to an application. We're working with the current relief nurseries. Relief Nursery Association will help us determine which communities are ready to be rolled out.
Sorry,
You can go forward.
Thank you. Thank you. As we get into the general governor's recommended budget, the governor has recommended additional funds for state and local capacity.
May I just stop you as a matter of management?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be with us.
Yes.
But your other people are not. And
yes.
I'm wondering if you'd like to just bring them up, because I hate for them to leave their local communities, come up here and testify, and they don't. Is that okay?
That's absolutely okay, Senator.
Okay.
Okay.
And you can call them. Ms. Manson.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, I want to introduce to you Marion County and Tillamook County. We'll bring Marion County up first, and their discussion will be facilitated by one of their county commissioners, Sam Brentano, and with him is Walt Biglow. Walt is the Marion County District Attorney. Dick Wifnell, who is a business person extraordinaire, and Sam Skilren, who is the Executive Director of the Salem Leadership Foundation, and they are just doing extraordinary work.
So let's say this. Please come up. So while you're coming up, in order that we might be fair to everybody, this committee adjourns at 2:30, and basically it's 10 after 2 now, which means that you have 20 minutes. Can you divide your time up in terms of 10 minutes each so that each can be heard? Unless, let's just talk about this a little bit since you sat up here now. Are you sure you want to hear Marion County first, since Tillamook came the farthest and these guys can more easily come back? What do you think about that? Just logistics here.
Whatever suits you, Senator, if you'd like to.
It's Thank you.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, then I'd like to introduce Marlene Putman, Director of the Tillamook County Commission on Children and Families, and Dan Krein, who is the Juvenile Director in Tillamook County.
And the reason I'm saying that, sound like Marion County, sound like you have a big program, and I'd like to give you more than 10 minutes to be able to present. And so if they take up the 20-minute time, I know Ms. Baker probably having a heart attack because we're on such a timeline. But I really, really want the committee to hear from the local communities. And if at all possible and you go over your 10 minutes, we won't have a heart attack. We'll bring Marion County up, and then if they need to come back, you can. Am I speaking out of school here? Okay, and since you're local, I think that would be good. So that each of you can have a little more time to present. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Putman.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, my name is Marlene Putman. I'm the director for the local Commission on Children and Families. And our job, I guess, today is to come and talk to you about what happens in Tillamook County when you talk about a Commission on Children and Families. What do we do? And I was looking at some of the words and talking about key investments, performance indicators, strategic investments, and I really can't talk that way in my local community if I want to get things done. And so I'm going to talk about some of the phrases that we use, and then between myself and Dan Krein, we'll give you some examples, specifically what we do and what happens with that work. So our job, basically, the way that we describe it with our local commissions is we tackle a problem. We do the research so we know what we're talking about and we know it's really an issue. We get the right people together. We figure out how to do it, and we get it done. That's the technical phrases that we use. In terms of what does that mean for a local project, I'm going to talk about a couple given the time that we're looking at here. So we're presented with a problem around hunger in Tillamook County. We are looking like we're the worst, and this is about 4 years ago. And I know that Representative Boone knows what I'm talking about. We also look at the state numbers and say, this looks really bad. What is it that in our local community we can do to address the needs of children and families? Our schools are saying, look at our free and reduced lunch rate. We have over 50% of kids eligible for free and reduced lunch. We have one school that has 80% of the children eligible. Can you help us, Commission, figure out how we can come together around addressing that issue? We looked at what's happening in the summer. Can we take some of the stress off?
And this was right before the USDA started to come forward with dollars regarding putting together summer meal sites. So we got our community together in partnership with a number of local churches and community organizations and said, hunger doesn't take a summer vacation. What is it that we can do? First of all, started out with two sites. We now have 22 sites in a small community. Tillamook County has about 25,000 people in it. But we know we're looking at about 3,000 children. So we invested, with the commission dollars, which is going to sound really small, we invested about $5,000 as incentive funds to tell people, if you want to start out and you don't have some food or supplies that you need, we'll use these dollars. Teeny amount. We only had a few sites starting out. We still have $3,500 4 years later. These sites said, we can bring the dollars together in our own community, but we need you to help us continuing the effort. We need PR, we need publicity, we need people to come to the table and be volunteers for our program. That's the role of the local commission, is to say, okay, we're starting back up again. Do you have your volunteers going? Is the publicity getting out? How can we help? This year we looked at trying to get a consistent message among all of our sites. They came up with the name of Grub Club. We find the dollars, look for the resources, they put it into place. So that's one example. The second example that I want to talk about is one that you've probably heard throughout the state of Oregon around early literacy or kids being ready to start school. We have a committee in Tillamook County that addresses early childhood issues, I guess you could call it, young children between infant age and up to 6 or 7 years old. Our local group of people get together once a month. There's about 15 to 20 of them. And they said, when we look at our numbers here, our kids in our region are doing the worst in terms of being ready to start school. What is it that we can have in place? So commission's job, get out there, look at the information, how many kids are getting into preschool, how many kids have parents are reading to them before they get to school, share the information with the group, figure out a strategy, which in our case was to provide outreach to all of the child care providers and train them, to parent groups, to do outreach through the health department in English and Spanish, and to get books in the hands of all of those children and training in the hands of all those providers. We now have one of the best rates in our region, and we're looking at additional ways to increase the skills of both the people that provide the care and the parents. Right now, our growing trend is in folks that are non-English speaking, Spanish speaking mainly. Our school has about a 25% increase in non-English speaking kids, and we know that their parents don't read or write in their primary language. So our main outreach now is a real struggle to work with people that can now share books with their own children even though they can't read them all themselves. So we're doing a lot of training on how do you get that information out to people that may not be familiar with books that they normally see here, or books for their own children at young ages. So those are two examples around hunger and around having children or getting children ready to start school.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. In that last example, who is doing the training and how's that all unfolding? How's it working? Well, the way that it's been established is it's a partnership between the school districts, two libraries, our main library branch, the Commission on Children and Families, two part-time people that have been hired through collaborative grants that do provide the outreach to the families and provide the training to the child care providers. The Child Care Resource and Referral Network sends all the information to all of our child care providers and to anybody who's interested in the training. They hold it on site in the child care provider's home or in the child care center and follow up with mentoring so they know how to do it. And we also provide those trainings for people that might want to be a child care provider. And for Spanish-speaking parents, we've actually taken the health department worker out, and she's met with two of them in their home and talked to them about how do you provide child care and what does that mean. So thank you, Senator Gordley, for the question.
And how is it working?
It's working wonderfully. We reach, through the health department members, 100 families in the first 3 months, and we're continuing to provide outreach through the health department as new families come in. The average during the course of 1 year is about 250 families, and through the child care providers, about 350 to 400 children. The commissions of our funds that are called locally invested funds, we have not used any of those funds in this specific project other than staff, Commission on Children and Family staff time to coordinate the work. This is all through other grants and community donations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you keep data in terms of your success? How do you get that information back to the State Commission?
Chair Carter, that when the comments were being asked about do we have all of our leveraging information indicated in the reports, that's one of the things that we're working on with the state staff is for those things that are not funded with Commission on Children and Families or the Commission on Children and Families dollars, we locally aren't doing the best job in reporting what we leverage. The state commission funds represent about 40% of the funds that are managed by the local commission. And so we're trying to, those that we directly leverage, and then the other funds that are leveraged by the organizations, we're trying to track locally ourselves with two people in the office. So thank you, Senator Kirk. I'm going to cut mine off if there are any other questions and let Dan Crine speak in there.
Okay.
2 minutes for me.
Chair Carter and members of the committee, my name is Dan Crine. I'm the Juvenile Department Director for Tillamook County for the past 15 years and a commission member on the local Commission on Children and Families and a board member for Tillamook School District 9. So that's a demonstration of when you're in a rural place, the number of hats that you get to wear. My experience in history with the commission is long since my very first job in the juvenile justice system was funded by the Juvenile Services Commission in Umatilla County clear back in the early 80s, so I've had a relationship with the commission for a long, long time. I've been asked to speak about some projects that are juvenile crime prevention funded in Tillamook County. I'll probably only get this first one done since I talk too much. We have a suspended and expelled program in our local school district that was started with juvenile crime prevention school district funds. The problem statement is one of that is statewide in nature in that all that is required by the law for school districts if a student is suspended or expelled due to behavior or danger situations or all those things that you can get suspended or expelled for, the only requirement by the law is 5 hours of tutoring time per week, which as a juvenile director I can tell you that that's not enough supervised time for the average child. So in Tillamook we sat down, meaning the school district, the juvenile department, the commission as a facilitator of this group, mental health, and other concerned folks, law enforcement, and talked about the issue of getting these kids more structured time around their educational experience when they got themselves in a position where they were suspended and or expelled from normal school attendance. And what was created was a program now where suspended and expelled kids go to school at the TOPS program, which is, I'll get this wrong probably, the Tillamook Options Program Service, which is a whole bunch of programs underneath one roof, and included in that is the suspended and expelled program where kids attend basically from 8 a.m. until 2 o'clock in the afternoon every day. So we went from 5 hours of tutoring time per week to basically about 6 hours of school time a day, getting close to a full school day even for those students that cannot attend at their regular public building. Now, as far as talking about results, I can say that Governor Kinsolver's investment that was made in 0103 biennium with juvenile crime prevention funds, at least for Tillamook County, and I know that's true, and my other fellow directors would say to you that where we've really seen an impact, you know, the outcome that the legislator asked about and that the newspaper asked about is recidivism. The outcome that I'm interested in is a lower crime rate in the first place and fewer referrals coming to the juvenile department and fewer kids coming through the door because they're receiving services of a preventive nature before they ever come to the juvenile department to see me or myself.
But do you keep data on recidivism?
Yes.
Oh, good.
The recidivism report comes out, Chair Carter. Every year there's a statewide recidivism report that comes out of the juvenile justice information system provided by the Youth Authority, and there are individual county results within that report. And what I was speaking of as far as results in regards to coming in the door in the first place is that Tillamook County, like many counties in Oregon, since the juvenile crime prevention dollars have started being invested locally, has seen a steady decline in the rate of referrals to the juvenile department for criminal behavior committed by children.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, do you have a problem similar to what we're experiencing in Portland, where there's a disproportionate number of students of color, African American, Latino, suspended and expelled from Portland Public Schools? In your community, what are you seeing with the Latino population, for example?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, we have an exploding Latino population, and as far as overrepresentation in suspended and expelled youth, I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. I would guess they're akin to ours in that kids tend to the Latino population youth tend to be a little bit overrepresented at the front end, meaning the front door, the discipline at school, and also we see a few more come through the juvenile department front door than their percentage in the community. But where we don't generally see an overrepresentation, at least speaking from the juvenile department, is in kids that graduate on into the correctional track of the OIA system. So I think that, and I think we're having some success around trying to prevent that overrepresentation from continuing on into the system and getting a grip on it early. In answer to your question as far as behavioral referrals at the school level, I think it's very, very similar, that we see more children of color, specifically for Tillamook, it is Hispanic, Latino youth, that initially get into trouble at school, and then the school does a pretty good job of not seeing them. I don't see them overrepresented. I'm at the alternative school where the suspended and expelled program is on basically a daily basis, and my staff for sure at a daily basis, and I don't see them overrepresented at that level. Thanks for
the
question.
This would be, if I may follow up just very briefly, this would be an area where the commissions working together with the Department of Education could be very helpful, and I'm going to assume, I know that's dangerous sometimes, that conversations are already going on that are focused on strategies, looking at strategies that can help us better understand why we see the disproportionate numbers that do exist, and what's being done or what can be done differently to intervene and turn this situation around. My sense is that it's what we're experiencing in Portland is happening in other places in the state. So what are we doing about it? And are we doing, with whatever we're doing, are we doing it aggressively? Are we doing it with a sense of urgency and understanding that this is about making sure that these young people's education isn't interrupted in ways that have them penetrating the juvenile justice system? Well, you follow my drift. We'd really like to get a better handle on the subject.
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, if I might quickly, from the school district side of the school board hat, I would say that the school in Tillamook, and it's generally been coordinated through the commission and the work that the commission does around bringing partners together to the table. It is a common discussed strategy, and there's a lot of discussion in the community of Tillamook about how to keep those minority youth engaged in school, because historically, and what the numbers reflect now, is that those kids, particularly Latino men, young men, drop out at a much higher rate than their Caucasian counterpart students do. And one of the things that the school board did, and if you this will seem a bit odd, but we have a school-funded soccer coach in a full-blown soccer program now, which was a really heavily debated in Tillamook and made a couple for uncomfortable school board meetings, where it was put back, or it was added to a system where not all things have been added back from the blows that the education system took during the economic downturn, and it was put back in before some other sports that had previously existed. And the thought behind the school board's thinking in that is that engaging those young men in particular, although we do have a girls program, in something that is extracurricular and helps them identify themselves more as a student of that school district, and give them in some pride in their role as a student would help keep some of those folks in the door. So I think that, and as far as the commission is concerned as a facilitator, there is ongoing discussion in Tillamook about things that used to be called under the Student Retention Initiative. We regularly talk about dropout rates. We regularly, which was one of the big outcomes that we hoped to affect with the suspended and expelled program, was not losing too many kids before we got a diploma in their hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds to me as if you could be an example in our county in particular in terms of what you're doing to keep these kids from graduating to a disproportionate number into the OIE system. So it sounds like you're doing some good stuff, and I hope that you're sharing that with other communities that are not being as successful as you are.
There's a lot of communication, Chair Carter, amongst all in the county, both the Commission on Children and Families and the partner agencies as well, the Directors Association. We regularly meet with Mickey and her, members of her staff, our board of directors do, the juvenile department directors do meet with the commission and OIE. And there's a lot of strategy discussed at all those meetings. One final point, I've used up all of Marion County's time. Hey, for the first time, I will go back home and say that Tillamook actually bumped Marion today. I appreciate that very much. I wanted to say, since it is today, we arrived just in time to hear the runaway and homeless youth rally on the steps. It is a passion of mine, and was involved in the subcommittee that was chaired by Gene Lasseter, who was in the room earlier, and I have to say that reaching out to those kids when it comes to budget time, please do that. You're looking, I have a fourth hat, I guess, today because I'm an ex-runaway and homeless kid myself. That's how you become the juvenile director, and would just encourage all of you when you get out your checkbooks to remember those kids, since those kids can end up being the juvenile department director, commission member, school board member, and legislators.
Thank
you for your time.
Ms. Blair?
Not a question, just a comment. And thank you both for making the trip over today. I'm most honored to have you as constituents, and for what all you do. Just, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
I got your message loud and clear, too. But I'm already, it's already on the top of my head.
Any other questions? I want sort of a bit of the order. No, I just look forward to Marion County returning tomorrow.
Oh, you,
Senator, you will. You will definitely. Hold on for a minute.
Thursday. I guess the question is, can you come to that in public testimony on Thursday?
Well, proposal for Marion County, actually. Tomorrow is public testimony. And I don't know whether you want to come and deal with the short period of time that we give people, or would you rather come back on Thursday as a panel?
Thursday
it is. Thank you very, very much for coming, and thank you, committee members, for being here.